Baked Bros presents the Know Your Dose podcast. Join hosts Nadeem Alhassan and Derek Espinosa as they turn the soil on the cannabis industry. With over 10 years of combined industry experience, these two experts will deliver your dose of cannabis, psychedelics, and personal development. Follow on their journey as they aim to destigmatize cannabis, combat the abuse of pharmaceuticals, and implement their altruistic approach into the budding cannabis industry.
Derek, you know that the rule of thumb is everything in moderation.
Including moderation.
Ah, there is such thing as too much of a good thing.
No, you're not wrong about that. You can die from drinking water.
Well, we want to talk about a condition called cannabinoid hyperemesis syndrome. Does that sound, did I say that correct?
Yes, cannabinoid hyperemesis syndrome.
So we're going to talk about what it is, why it's becoming a problem, if are certain products worse than others, and what else you want to cover, man?
What are ways you can mitigate it?
Yeah, so.
And what happens if you don't?
Let's start out with what it is.
So cannabinoid hyperemesis syndrome, and for the rest of this episode, we're just going to call it CHS because that's a lot of words. It's actually a new phenomenon. And interestingly, so what happens is chronic cannabis users experience extreme bouts of nausea and vomiting.
Ooh. What's chronic?
Say that again?
What's chronic? Like chronic? What determines chronic? Well, what determines a chronic cannabis user?
I guess not necessarily chronic.
I guess if you're having symptoms, and that
if
would
you're
mean
experiencing this, you're definitely a chronic user.
Okay. Okay.
And I mean, the way that most people think about chronic is if you smoke every day. So I mean, most of us listening and participating in the show are probably
we say chronic and I'm like, where is it at?
Exactly. No, but these are people who I mean, you have to consume a pretty large amount, hefty amount of cannabis. But you'll experience these really intense bouts of nausea and vomiting. Now, the caveat to that is it's relatively new. This wasn't something that people were talking about or physicians were seeing, you know, 10 or so years ago. And actually where I first heard about it was I had connected after, you know, years of not participating in my Mormon friend group, connecting back with one. And his brother was training to become a doctor. He was doing his residency. And we got on the subject of cannabis, and he didn't know at the time that I was into cannabis. And he was like, yeah, dude, my brother is getting these people coming in, and they can't stop throwing up. They consume so much cannabis, and they just keep throwing up. And the only thing that works is a hot shower. Mm. Now, the bullshit detector in my mind went off, and I was like, this kid's crazy. There's no way that that's true. And a few years went by, and when I started working in the dispensary, all of a sudden – I found more people coming in who had experienced this and who had heard about this. And then over the last, I would say, 3 years maybe, this has become a bigger topic. But yeah, I mean, it's a, I don't know, it's a problem for sure. There's no clear science behind it though. That's the interesting thing.
Yeah, so I remember like seven or eight years ago, this is before Big Bros, you know, concentrates became a thing. Mm. And that's when I started hearing about it. You know, and mildly experienced some of it too. And so I was like, this is weird because I've smoked cannabis my entire life. What's going on here? Right. Like I was just waking up and I was feeling a little nauseous in the morning. I'm like, mm-hmm. That's kind of weird. Mm-hmm. Like that's, yeah, I got an iron gut. I don't ever feel nauseous. And I did notice that hot showers helped. Well, of course I get on forums and Reddit and all this stuff. And I come across this little syndrome, right. And something else called lipid pneumonia because I didn't experience that. Thank goodness. But in the early days, these concentrates, they were not what they are today.
Right. That was what was behind, the vaping crisis, quote unquote. I'm doing air quotes because you can't see me, but
yeah, it was
contamination.
It was the quality of these concentrates. Number one, that was correlated to the lipid pneumonia, which is literally like fats building up in your lungs, not good. And for the CHS, it was the fact that okay, let's just rewind the clock a little bit. Cannabis has always been a flower form, right? And really the strongest concentrates you had were something like dry sift hash or bubble hash. You know what I mean? Which is more of like a European delicacy, you know?
Right. And even in hash's glory days before concentrates, yeah, not even, it was like 30 to 40%.
Exactly. THC. Whereas concentrates, you know, go up to like 70, 80, 90, percent. So I mean, just think about that. If a gram of flour is, you know, it's been argued, you know, 10 to 14, 10 to 15 milligrams, but you're actually only getting like 6 or 7 because you're combusting a lot of it. So you're not getting a lot in like a full gram of flour. Is that correct? Or is that a joint?
I think that may be a joint. I
think it's a joint. A gram of flour is about 15 milligrams of what I've gathered.
A gram of, no, that can't be right.
15 milligrams of THC.
No, there's no way.
This is an average that was actually agreed upon from the testing facility operators here in Arizona on average from a gram of flour that was tested, 15 milligrams of THC.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So
interesting.
If you're combusting that into a joint, let's say you have a 1 gram joint, that's a big doink, everybody. That's like a pinky joint. Mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Then you would get approximately maybe half of that because of the combustion factor. Whereas when going into concentrates like hash oils, especially back then, and when it was like real new, you know, you're dabbing this, right? This is even before pens, really. And you're taking, you know, like you're vaporizing this concentrated oil that may be 80%, and you're hitting it in one hit. You're getting, you know, what, 80 times, 8 times.
Just say your body wasn't designed to absorb that much cannabinoids.
So your receptors are just going on like overload mm-hmm. from all these exogenous cannabinoids, and it's like, rah! I guess I could compare it to like smoking a blunt in one hit versus smoking a joint. Like, not good. So, yeah, not good.
So I think there's a couple things that need to be said here. The first, are there certain products that are worse than others? Yeah. Anything that has a high amount of THC. So this could happen from edibles. This could happen from concentrates. It could happen from high potency flower, but really it's the concentration that matters, like how much THC is going into your body over how long of a period, right? That seems to be a huge factor. Some of the theories out there are, one is maybe it's a contaminant that's making its way and it's concentrated in concentrates and things like that. I'm pretty sure that's been debunked. For me, the theory that makes the most sense is you're overstimulating your endocannabinoid system and then it's overcompensating. So let me kind of tease that apart. So we know that the endocannabinoid system wants to keep the body in homeostasis, right? But you have to understand that your body is never in a perfect state of homeostasis because it's constantly fluctuating, right? You have a temperature. So like temperature, right? We talk about temperature and we're like, well, yeah, you want to be at 98.6. Yeah, that's an average that you actually like are never at. You have a low, you know, temperature set point, which happens about 2 hours before you wake up. And then you have a high temperature set point, which is when you're most alert. Mm-hmm. And you're constantly fluctuating up and down throughout the day. So with the endocannabinoid system and with your endocannabinoid levels, if you artificially jack up the level of cannabinoids in your body through something like THC, your body is going to have a natural compensation downward.
Right.
So if I consume all this THC and then in the absence of it, my body is trying to shift itself. It's not going to baseline. It's going further than much further than baseline. It will have some kind of effect. And this is why when you stop using cannabinoids, you experience, you know, withdrawal effects. Now, they may not be like the same withdrawal effects of stopping alcohol or opioids, but people tend to feel irritated. People tend to not sleep as well.
Wasn't there just an article we read? I think maybe you had even sent it on an addiction being correlated to cannabis.
An addiction?
Yeah, like you can get addicted. Like there's a physical and mental addiction.
But absolutely,
like they're different, but both can apply here. And now it's just that the duration of the symptoms of the withdrawal,
the severity
is not something alcohol can kill
smaller.
You.
Yeah, you know? And the amount of people who meet that criteria is also much smaller.
This is also kind of a sensitive. I guess a little bit of a sensitive subject then, because there are a lot of individuals, patients, you know, that do require a high dose. So are they harming themselves? Are they at risk?
So I think the question you're asking is, why is this a hard subject to talk about? Right?
Is it?
Yeah. It is. I mean, most people don't want to acknowledge that cannabis. Let me put it this way. This industry was built on the idea that cannabis is a medicine. And I think we've overhyped that. Like,
yeah, because too much good of a good thing can be a bad thing.
Exactly, man. And so it's like, you know what? Opioids are a medicine too. Mm-hmm. And you can take too much of them and you can really screw up your health. Mm-hmm. You can do that with Tylenol. You can do it with aspirin. So I think that we first need to get out of the mindset that like cannabis is this good thing that's a vitamin for your body that you can take as much of and not have any consequences. That's just, that's fantasy land. That doesn't exist for anything. And then the second thing is when you're thinking about consumption and you're thinking about addiction and what's the line there, right? Really, if you ask most people who are worth their weight in salt in terms of addiction researchers, they'll tell you that the biggest criteria is this thing causing you harm in your life? Mm. What does that mean? Yeah. So if I'm consuming cannabis to the point where I'm becoming nauseous and I can't stop.
Yeah. It's affecting problem, your life.
Right. If I'm consuming cannabis and I'm not meeting my commitments in my home to my family, mm-hmm. that's a problem. If I'm consuming cannabis and I can't meet my job requirements or my school requirements, that's a problem. Yeah. If none of those, if you're not seeing this direct correlation between, you know, a detriment in your health, your relationships, your productivity, and all these things, and you consume cannabis, you probably don't have a problem. Mm. You know what I mean? But to think that cannabis doesn't cause any problems in anybody's life is absolutely insane. Anything can. People derail. Get addicted to exercise.
Derail, what do you think is more difficult to deal with, the mental withdrawal or the physical withdrawal of cannabis?
I think it depends on the person. Mm. You know what I mean? Because if I'm using cannabis for anxiety, right? The mental effects on the back end of that are going to be way harder than any kind of physical withdrawal, right? If my primary thing is pain, right, I'll experience an increase in pain when I stop because my body's overcompensating. And that actually happens with people. That's why there's a huge debate as to whether cannabis is actually good for anxiety or not, because when you stop, now all of a sudden you have more anxiety. And so what can happen is I have to smoke all day, every day in order to mitigate this anxiety.
Right.
So, I mean, these are really complicated issues that are fun to talk about, but they may be outside the bounds of, you know, our expertise.
That's why I said derail.
But No. I think it's good. And long story short, you know, there's tons of research on this and it's not done yet. We have a lot to learn.
Yeah. So, well, then how can I prevent this from happening? Obviously, know your dose, right? We always get to that. But what are some ways that I can prevent this from happening if I am, I guess, regular or could be considered chronic cannabis consumer?
I mean, the first thing is to rule out everything else, right?
All the symptoms, is it affecting your lifestyle? Is it affecting work, school, all that, you just said?
Or like, do I have something else that's really wrong with me that's causing me to feel nauseous and vomit all the time? You know what I mean? Because it could be that something else is going on. What?
An elimination diet.
Exactly. So once you've ruled out some of that and it seems like, yeah, cannabis is the thing, use less. You should always, minimum effective dose, right? There's some serious truth to that and to moderation. Like, outside of medical conditions, consuming any substance all day, every day is usually a recipe for disaster. You know what I mean? Like, caffeine. If I drink coffee all day, every day, studies show after 5 cups, it becomes detrimental to your health. Whereas under 5 cups, it's actually good for your health for most people. It's that way with everything else. And so it's not like a good or bad thing. It's just what is working for you. If you're consuming so much and you're starting to see these negative effects, you need to cut back.
You said hot showers. Is there anything else that can help in case, you get in this position or anybody, you know, of our listeners get in this position?
So what's interesting is that there are these receptors called TRPV1 receptors. They're pain receptors. and they're tied to the endocannabinoid system in a roundabout way. And activating them, they're sensitive to heat, can actually help alleviate this. This is why the hot shower works. So there's some studies that show that capsaicin, so like spicy foods or the compound that's in spicy foods, whether it be creams or ingested, may help. But honestly, like the biggest thing is stopping. That tends to be
like cold turkey or titrate down.
I mean, if I'm vomiting and super nauseous all the time, I would probably go cold turkey. You know what I mean? Like it's probably going to suck, but it's way better than being nauseous and vomiting all the time. If you can't do that, then absolutely stair step your way down. You got to find what's right for you.
Dude, love it. Love talking to you. Guys, if you're experiencing any of this, I highly encourage you to do some research or consult with your doctor, because we are not doctors, although I call Dr. D Dr. D all the time. Hey, if you appreciate us as much as we appreciate you, please leave a rating and review. Guys, you can reach out to us on knowyourdosepodcast.com, bakebros.com, Instagram, Facebook, you name it. Guys, thank you so much. Have a wonderful rest of your week. Hey, everybody. Quick disclaimer. The Know Your Dose podcast is for entertainment and informational purposes only. Let's be real. None of us are doctors. Our content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical or public health advice. Please be smart and always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Seriously, never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you heard on this podcast. That would just be insane.